Super, it's lovely to be with you once again. Really nice to see you again. Those who don't know me, I'm from Cambridge, but I'm minister of a church in Sutton Coalfield on the edge of Birmingham. Am I on? No?
Yeah, I've
got a light. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Is that right? Okay, keep going. I'll just say that Ken Benjamin is a friend of mine. We had him do what he's doing this weekend. We had him at our church right at the beginning, and he really is very, very good. He's a very good speaker. He makes the rest of us feel like we shouldn't really do it. So I commend him to you. Go and hear him tonight. Then at least you'll have one good sermon in the day. So do go and hear him tonight. So in my church, I'm speaking on 2 Peter. I'm preaching my way through 2 Peter. So, but I got stuck on the first half of the first verse. So that's all we're going to do today, if that's okay. The rest of 2 Peter, the church is going to get at some point. Well, I asked our church, what is the most important thing that you do every day? So I'll ask you that question. Just ponder it for a moment. Maybe that you would immediately say, well, I wash, or I eat, or I sleep, or I exercise, or I pray, or I care. I don't know what you would think. What was the word that came into your mind? What is the most important? I'm not going to ask you to stick your hands up because I'm not. I don't know what the thing is. And then if I asked you this question, and I did it with our church, what is the most important thing that you do every week? And I had the kids stick their hands up, and one kid stuck their hand up and said, I have a bath. And the mother was mortified and said, but you have a bath every day. And I tried to tell the whole church it wasn't just once a week. So I don't know what it is, but they, you know, it was someone would say it was a sport thing, or I don't know. What is the most important thing that you would say you do every week? Just maybe once a week, twice a week, something like that. And then the final question is this, is if you had to tell me one thing about you, what is the most important thing that you would tell me? What really do you think I would need to know about you? And the reason I've asked this question is because I want to think just a little bit about identity and how we describe ourselves to other people and how we hear other people describe us. What do we think we need to tell other people about us, and what do we realize other people describe us to others about, or introduce us, or and all of this feeds into how we think about ourselves and what really is who we are. So I want to think about what these descriptions tell us. And on the screen now are coming all the different words that describe me. Some of them you would expect, some of them are different. Now, I could choose to introduce myself, I could use any combination of those words because they are all true about me. The interesting one is, well, not interesting one, I realise that for my home church, it's a very weird thing that I'm a Cambridge United fan, whereas for here, it's completely normal. That hasn't batted no eyelid at all. Let me tell you, we are a rare species in Birmingham, and particularly people who travel a long distance to go and watch us lose 5-0 in Hartlepool or wherever, Morecambe or wherever it is that I've been and wished that I supported another team. But if I introduce myself to you, if I perhaps describe myself as a fat-bellied, balding, big-nosed old man, you would say that I probably have self-esteem issues, that perhaps the way I perceive myself isn't very healthy. I think all of those things are probably true, but if that's how I think of myself, you might worry a little bit that I'm not as confident as perhaps I should be. If I described myself as the reverend team leader, school governor, you might feel, well, he's really into status. He wants us to think how important he is. And this is a little cartoon about status. If I describe myself as a dog owner and a Cambridge United fan, you might think, well, what's wrong with his job? Why hasn't he told us what he does? Because particularly for men of my age, it's often, well, what do you do? What's your job? And that's perhaps if I was to say, well, let me introduce myself. I'm a dog owner. I support Cambridge United. You'd say, well, that's a strange thing. If I was to describe myself as a white English man, some people would feel quite threatened, particularly in the community that I'm in Birmingham. That's quite a threatening way of describing yourself. You're trying to make a point. If I was to describe myself as white, British, married, and a parent, all of those things are true, you'd say, well, you're very privileged. Everything has worked, everything is stacked in your favor. So there's all kinds of ways of describing ourselves. Maybe that's a little bit safer, but it's a little bit dull. If I was to stand up this morning and say, hi, my name's Donald, and I'm heterosexual, you might think, well, he's a little bit sexually obsessed. Why does he need to tell us that? Why is he defined by sexual status? There's all kinds of ways of describing ourselves, and they can be controversial, but they are revealing. They tell us either what we think of who we are or what we think we want other people to know about us. And the reality is we change the descriptions when we're in different places because we want other people to connect with us on the basis of what we think we can connect with, if that makes sense. So maybe you say, well, I'm a Christian. Maybe that's a very easy and confident way of describing yourself. Maybe you do that regularly. You'd say, oh, I'm a Christian. Perhaps, like me, you're just getting a little uncomfortable with that phrase because it's a word that identifies me with a lot of people in the world who I don't necessarily want to identify with. Perhaps some political views that I don't particularly want to identify with, certainly some deeply hypocritical behavior. And whenever you see stuff on the news, if they can label that person as a Christian, it's problematic, isn't it? Perhaps it'd be more accurate to describe ourselves as a disciple, and yet that isn't really the kind of word that we would use, is it? You don't say, oh, I'm a disciple of Jesus. Yeah, it's the biblical word. It's the word that describes people. But we kind of feel uncomfortable with defining ourselves as a disciple. Maybe we would define ourselves as a child of God. Again, that might be a bit embarrassing to say to people, but actually it's a profound status. We've been adopted, we're valued, we're loved, we're accepted, we belong in relationship with God. So who are we? Well, I used to be introduced as John and Hillary's son. That's my early life because I'm there. That's my mum and dad, John and Hillary. That was a period in my life. Then when I became a Christian in Queen Edith Chapel, where I was always Katie's little brother, because my elder sister went there first. In fact, when I had the privilege of being at David at Steve's father's funeral just the other month in QEC, a number of people said to Kate, "Is your little brother here?" Which wouldn't have minded. I would have been okay if I hadn't been standing next to her. And she would say, "This is him." Apparently, I'm quite different, principally because I had a lot of hair then. So there was a period in my life where I was defined as the guy with the hair, which means nothing to you because I don't have any anymore. But there was a period when I had an obsessive amount of hair. Then for a long time, I was a youth worker. The point is that those are no longer descriptions that anybody who knows me in the last 30 years would recognize, and yet they were who I was, but I'm not who that is anymore. And how do I want to be introduced? What do we want people to say about us? What do we want people to say? This is who they are. This is the most important thing that they are. So this is our identity, the labels we or others give us. And our identity is the order in which we place them. So all that big list of things I had, you could have an equal list of all of those things that are true, but your identity is the ones you choose commonly to reveal to others or to describe or how you perceive yourself. And it may change, as I've said, with different people, and it may be healthy or unhealthy. It may be telling that perhaps we're not quite where God sees us. So our identity reveals how we feel about ourselves. It reveals how we feel about the people we're with, whether we feel safe with them or whether we feel alarmed or unsafe. It reveals what matters most to us. And therefore, it reveals our possible gods, the things that we consider to be our source of meaning and of happiness and of strength and of direction. And it will reveal our hurts and our insecurities. Heard of a story of a lady who was in the lift with who she thought was Robert Redford. And I don't know if you've ever met famous persons, that awkward period where you're trying to work out whether you know them or not. I've only ever met one famous person, and that was at a urinal, which is another story, and equally awkward moment as to whether you recognise and say that you know them. So this person was staring in the lift as they go down at this guy. And in the end, she said, "Are you the real Robert Redford?" And he said, "Only when I'm alone." Which is a good answer, isn't it? Who is the real us? In respect of what everybody else thinks, who is the real us? Who are we when we're alone? So here are all these things that our identity reveals. And if we describe ourselves fundamentally by our work status, by what we do, or what we used to do, or perhaps we define ourselves by not having a job, then that may reveal something about us. Am I speaking too loud? It may reveal that we're a bit insecure, or maybe a bit proud. It may reveal that we want people to respect us or we fear that they don't. It may reveal that what matters most to us is work. Therefore, that it may be a God, that it may be something that has replaced Jesus in importance and value and security. It may be that our God is our status. And our insecurity is, am I achieving? Am I significant? So whatever it is that you define yourself, well, you can answer all of those questions. I'm not going to go through it. But if you define yourself by a relationship status, hey, I'm so-and-so, I'm a widower, or I'm a widow, or I'm married, or I'm a parent, that will reveal that that is a really important thing to us. And there'll be healthy aspects about that. But there may be unhealthy aspects about that. There is something called the looking glass syndrome. I don't know if you know the looking. You may be thinking, when are we going to get to the Bible? We will get to the Bible around about 2:00. We will get to the Bible, I promise you. There is a thing called the looking glass syndrome where, it's a psychological term, I believe. And the idea is that people define themselves by the way other people define them, and they become what other people think they are. In other words, if you tell a child that they are stupid, the looking glass syndrome says that they will become stupid. They will act up to that. They will perform in that way. If you call somebody brilliant, they act up to it. They perform that. They achieve better. So the looking glass syndrome is this idea that we become how everybody else sees us, and that may be good or that may be bad. If we define ourselves by our sexual status, that may be our God. Anne Swindle says this: when we start defining ourselves by what we lack, we obsess about it, we yearn for it, we desire it above everything else. But Jesus has already given us our true identity. It is based in who he is. He doesn't name me by my weakness, my sin, my lack. Instead, he names us by what he has done for us. He calls us his masterpiece, his children, his friends. May we define ourselves by our spiritual status. The Bible. First, I only got the first few words. The first few words of 2 Peter, Simon Peter. Interesting, he calls himself two names. He calls himself what his mum, presumably, or his dad named him, Simon. And he calls him how Jesus labeled him, Peter, the rock. He says, I'm both. I am who I was before I knew Jesus, and I am now what Jesus has made me. He has grasped that an encounter with Jesus has changed him. His identity, he's introducing himself to these people. He's saying who he is. He's Simon Peter. He's the past and the present. He is the man who he was. He's the man who God has made him to be. And then he calls himself a servant. Now, none, that wasn't on my list of things. Nobody said that when I said, what's the most important thing that you do in my church? I know all of you were thinking, the most important thing I do every day is serve. I never thought of that. It's not in my list of descriptions. I don't go to meetings and say, I was at a meeting, I'm a school governor, and I was at a meeting for governors where everybody else in the meeting was a head teacher. I'm not quite sure how that happened. But I was asked to go and represent our school on this thing. And you go around the room and they say, well, I'm the head teacher of this, I'm the head teacher of this, now I'm the head teacher of this. And it came to me and I thought, I really am in the wrong meeting here. I should have said I'm a servant. It doesn't occur to me. What is a servant? When we discover that serving is mentioned 50 times more in the New Testament than leading, we should need no more evidence of what is pressing on the heart of God. A servant is someone who identifies themselves as submissive to Jesus. They identify Jesus as greater than them. They are working to his agenda. A servant is somebody who says, I want to do what this guy wants me to do. I want to do what this God has called me to do. It's hard to fall on your face when you lean over backwards to help. Serving, in one sense, is easier. Serving is following instructions. It is saying, here's my life, God. What would you have me do with it? The proof, I love this quote, and I use it a lot. Francis Chan, lots of you know Francis Chan. Well, you won't know him, but you'll know of him. Unless, well, maybe some of you do know him. Anyway, enough rambling. The proof God is moving in your life is not what happens to you. It is what happens through you. Isn't that powerful? So much of church life is, do this for me, God. And actually, our identity is to say, here I am, God. To be a servant is to be part of something bigger. Martin Luther King. Everybody can be great because anybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. Sorry, guys. You don't have to make your subject and your verb agree to serve. You only need a heart full of grace, a soul generated by love. I love the. It seems a very strange thing. You don't have to make your subject and your verb agree to serve. But that so helps me because I can't speak English properly. And I don't have to be able to understand it. And every time I do a PowerPoint, somebody will come up and say, you spelt that word wrong and you got the comma in the wrong. You know the thought police? Stuart's nodding his head. You don't have to be able to do that to serve. It doesn't require a huge amount. But to serve Jesus is to serve others. He says, look, this is who I am. I'm a person who is devoted to doing what Jesus wants me to do in the life of other people. Earn your success based on the service to others, not at the expense of others. This is a Chinese proverb. You're probably familiar with this. Who knows? I might have used it here before. I use this one a lot. If you want happiness for an hour, take a nap. If you want happiness for a day, go fishing. If you want happiness for a year, inherit a fortune. If you want happiness for a lifetime, help somebody. Peter identifies himself. This is what matters to him. This is who he is. He is a servant. And then he calls himself an apostle. And what is this? This is about having an awareness of the particular and specific and individual calling on his life to be a messenger and also to be a leader. Greater and more intelligent people than me, like Ken Benjamin, will be able to articulate exactly what an apostle is. It's something to do with being a messenger and a leader. The point is that he knows his purpose. When you do frontline, because some of you will say, well, I have no idea what my calling is and I don't know what I'm supposed to do with my life. You're going to do the frontline course. It will really help you grasp it. It will really help you grasp it. So don't worry if you're thinking, well, I don't know what I am meant to be. The next few weeks in this church, it will help you explore all of that. But the point is that Peter knew his purpose, he knew his goals, and he knew his strategy. And the frontline course will help you work that out. But if you don't quite, you want to taste that, it simply is to serve Jesus in the place where you are this week, tomorrow, in a normal way. You just love people. You just help people. And you just serve the kingdom of God. Many are called, but few stand up. I'm going to fly through this very quickly. He then talks about the identity of Jesus. He's God, he's Savior, and he's righteous. This is the point where I stay in my church, and we've got the next sermon will be about this. And this is the point where I tell you, tough luck, you're not going to know more about that. Then he finishes off with our identity. He says, you've received a precious faith, and you have understood, and you are to receive grace, the undeserved, unbelievable love of God in abundance and peace in abundance that comes through knowing Jesus. The identity, perhaps an identity for us to explore, to own, to work out. Firstly, to be a servant. God has called us fundamentally to obey him by caring for other people. Secondly, to hear the specific and individual call of what that looks like in the places we will be tomorrow at 11 o'clock, tomorrow at 3 o'clock. To be a servant in the specific called places and relationships that you and I have tomorrow. Who's looking to us for help or comfort or strength or encouragement or guidance? What colleague, what patient, what client, what neighbor, what friend, what family member, what stranger that we meet on the bus? What is God calling us to? And then our identity is that in all of that, we've received an amazing amount of grace. And that's what empowers and equips us. And we've received an amazing amount of peace. Our identity is that God has given us grace and peace. And the people we will meet and serve tomorrow have not yet grasped that, but they need it. And we know the Savior. All of that's unpacked in the rest of 2 Peter 1, but doesn't help you at all. But I want to leave us with some questions to reflect on for a moment. What is our identity? How do we perceive ourselves? Is it good or is it negative? Is it how God sees us? Or does it need some redemption and some healing? How do we describe ourselves? When we look in the mirror, what do we see? And is our identity shaped positively or negatively by others? Are we affected by the looking glass syndrome? Have we become what others wanted us to be? And might we become what Jesus wants us to be? might we just receive the abundance of his grace and his peace that says we are valued and significant and precious and loved, and therefore we matter because we're his children. So how might the love of Jesus shape our identity?